your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are. Rest make dab.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. Well, tonight at the end of a very tumultuous and interesting week, we're going to touch on some of these concepts that have been floated recently. And one is this fake news concept. And what that seems to be covering is the latest revelations coming out of the Anthony Weiner bust, you know, up in New York, where on his computer that he was sharing with his wife, estranged wife, Huma Abedin, certain very incriminating evidence. We have people coming out with statements like Eric Prince saying that he had inside information, that some of the information that was found on that computer, that notebook computer, was criminal in nature. But we're just going by what he said, and he attributes that to leaks coming out of the New York Police Department. There are rumors also that the Justice Department closed down any further investigation by the New York City Police, but we don't have that verified at this time. What I want to say about this whole situation is I've created a new concept, you could say, or I've coined a new term. And the new term is false-fake concepts. And basically what I'm saying here is that we have to go back a number of decades to understand, I believe, the pedophilia dynamic and the pedophilia community and what has been going on for several decades. There have been major scandals in the past. We've had the Dutroux affair in Belgium. We've had the Franklin scandal, which up in Nebraska, Omaha, Nebraska, the Presidio military base abuse. We've had also, as a response to this, well, also in addition, we had the McMartin preschool abuse, and then also the Finder scandal. These are several of the scandals that have surfaced over a number of years. And basically what they gave rise to, okay, was as these adults or parents or other individuals associated with possible child abuse would get to work their way into court after being charged and so forth. And so grand juries had to hear a certain amount of evidence before they would render, you know, an indictment, see, in the different counties and different states that these allegations arose from. So you got to get past the grand jury, then you got to get into court on criminal charges of child abuse. Well, there was a concept that was invented by some of these parents, or you could say individuals that had been accused, and it's basically called the false memory syndrome. And what it's stating basically, and just in a very concise way, is that these possible child abusers were falling back on the theory or the concept that children do not have accurate, cannot accurately recall past memories accurately. And so that set off a debate within the psychology and the psychiatry communities of whether or not false memory was a particularly good or concept or not, or valid, I should say. So there began to be a debate within the community of psychologists and psychiatrists as to whether or not this false memory syndrome, so-called syndrome, or false memory period, was a valid concept or not, being used by the defenses of these different abused individuals, whether they were parents or adults or whatever. So that worked its way into court, and in some cases, juries would find in favor of the accused. See, so you can read on the internet today about false memory syndrome and so forth. And there's a community of psychologists and so forth that have collected around some of the accused individuals of child abuse that are saying, yes, it's valid, and false memory syndrome and stuff like that is a valid concept. On the other hand, you have psychiatrists and psychologists that have worked years long in the area of rehabilitation and counseling of all kinds of abused individuals, okay, whether they were abused as children or adults or whatever. And so as a result, there's a large body, I would say, of information that refutes the concept of false memory syndrome, is saying that it is not valid, and that you can interview children with certain objects and so forth to draw out of the children certain memories that they had that are valid. So I put up on my site, our site, thesecrettruth.com, I put up there an index that I lifted out of the WikiLeaks. There's a page also on this, Wikipedia. And I've lifted and put an index there of psychiatrists and psychologists that are refuting the concept of false memory syndrome and saying that it is not a valid concept. So these decades ago, we had these defendants, you could say, that were using, see, as a defense, these kinds of concepts called false memory syndrome. Now, let's move over to England, see. Jimmy Savile, he socialized all the way to the top of the royalty in England. And then we've got a recent case, an example of Jeffrey Epstein, who had the Lolita Express down there, flying people down there to his island, okay. But also we've had the Catholic Church, the pedophilia in the Catholic Church. We've had, you know, Hollywood continues to be a do-your-own-thing, anything-goes type of society. We've had Kathy O'Brien that's come out as a whistleblower, and other people also. So this moves us up to the present date, so to speak. But anyway, if you go in to my page, our page, Charlotte Littlefield, my page, you'll see an index there of individuals who have written articles and books about, and they refute and put down and discredit the false memory syndrome. Now, there are sites out there that you're going to find that still tout the false memory syndrome. But some of the foundation and so forth were founded by members of families and parents and so forth that were accused of their saying falsely. See? And there are many cases that were found in favor of the accused using, based on this false memory. Okay, so that's a collection of individuals that have used this very, very successfully. Now let's go back to our previous program last week here on the Secret Truth. Okay. The second hour, and we're going to, I feel that this is so important that there were a couple of things that I put up there on that site, okay? And one of the things was that I interviewed, I think Charlotte was off that night, but anyway, I interviewed the author, the co-authors, you could say, of Confessions of a DC Madam, okay? And the co-authors were Henry Vinson and Nick Bryan, okay? And they were authors of Confessions of a DC Madam. And Vinson got it. He was gay, and he was working as a prostitute for gay men that wanted gay boys. But at the time, he was not a boy. He was a man, adult. We're talking about adults here. Henry Vinson today, He declares that he never provided any underage children to anyone in Washington. As a result, he served a couple of prison sentences because there was an individual there that was demanding that he provide underage children to their clients. And he maintains even today and in this book that he never provided underage children to anyone in Washington when he was head of this call service. It was a boy call service, you could say, for not boy but gay. So let me use that to clarify. He was running a call service and he was providing gays to political figures and other individuals in the Washington D.C. area and the surrounding area. Now, as our interview went on, and also the two authors, Henry Vincent and Nick Bryan of Confessions of a D.C. Madam, of the two, Nick Bryan is a professional writer. He wrote a previous book, entitled Franklin Scandal, okay? And what he did with that book was he tied back some of the individuals in the Omaha Franklin scandal out there. There's another book by John DeCamp entitled Franklin Cover-Up. So there's two books here. Let me just state this so our listening audience can get it right. There's two books that we're going to be discussing today. One is called The Franklin Cover-Up by John DeCamp, and the second one is called Franklin Scandal by Nick Bryan. Okay, now, later on, because of Nick Bryan's experience in this area of pedophilia and so forth, he links up with his co-author, Henry Vincent, who had been running in the past a gay call service in Washington, D.C. of adult gays for clients that are in the Washington area. So they collaborated together and co-wrote Confessions of a D.C. Madam. See, now that's what we're the second hour is important tonight to listen to, because it goes into detail about some of the clients that they had. They had clients at the top of the power structure in Washington D.C. and as a result, they got an insight into Washington politics. But a Craig Spence there that they highly suspect was CIA or intelligence connected with some intelligence agency in the Washington, D.C. area, had established a honeypot operation there. And the honeypot operation was used for generating blackmail against representatives and high, very powerful people. And so this honeypot operation by Craig Spence, the author, co-author, who was running this gay call service, Henry Vincent, was shown around the mansion that Craig Spence was using. He had one-way mirrors and cameras and audio, microphones everywhere to record and then use that to incriminate or to blackmail certain very powerful figures in the Washington area. We call it a honeypot operation, and that's what they were running. But what's important, and listen carefully to this second hour that's following this first hour tonight, is that there's a Larry King, a black man out of Omaha, Nebraska, that was soliciting and working in that scandal out there in the Omaha, Nebraska area. Well, he meets in Washington, D.C., Craig Spence, and they have a meeting there. And there are people there that are privy to this meeting and were there and can verify that, and Henry Vincent is one of them. So there's a connection between the Omaha Franklin cover-up, Franklin scandal, with Confessions of a D.C. Madam and the honeypot operation in Washington, D.C. They knew each other, see. And so this underground, it's an underground, see, we're talking about. There's a power system out here, okay? And the secret societies form a basis or foundation for much of this power system because they're sworn to secrecy. See? And so I'm not saying that every member of every secret society is guilty of what we're talking about tonight. But I'm saying that that secrecy that is embedded within the secret societies acts as a way to keep any further nefarious types of activities at bay or out of sight of the public at large. The problem with what's happening today for the elites that are into some of these very, very nefarious or very, very evil practices is that when the Franklin cover-up was going on back in the 80s and so forth, we didn't have the citizen reporter like we have today. When you begin to see that the alternate broadcasters or the alternative news people have created and motivated many citizens to grab a camera or a recorder and to go out and start videotaping and becoming videographers, if not citizen reporters. With the millions of citizen reporters that we have out there today at all kinds of events and all kinds of situations and all kinds of angles, then it's hard to escape the scrutiny of the public at large now, because these citizen so-called reporters and bloggers and website, you know, could say establishers, and news reporters now, and I would say that they are more valid in some cases than your mainline media. This concept of fake news has been floated by the mainline press and the broadcasters to decimate and to go after and to destroy the alternative press, which is, it has risen up out of citizenship of good, loyal, patriot citizens with a camera and wanting to get down to the truth. But the point I'm trying to make tonight is anyone that has a web connection, that has a camera, or has a recorder, can go to events or be in places out of sight. Many of these cameras today, like I have several cameras that have 32x zoom, so they can be, you can be 150 feet away from something and get right up there. So the angles that people are beginning to come in with high zoom capability, and you can lip read sometimes. They have lip readers out there that are experts at that. But the ability to even videotape people that they see together at a distance, at funny angles that nobody would ever suspect that they're being watched. This is opening up truly the citizen reporter dynamic. And the citizen reporter dynamic is beginning to open up and decimate the elite's power system. And then you've got the internet also that has been speaking about the power structure on a pyramidal basis for several decades now. I know I first started getting acquainted with the internet in about 1986. I built my first desktop then, and it was XT, I think they called it. But so we started from the side that I came in from on the internet was building my own computers. I would take, I think it still cost me $600 then, but that was better than $1,000 or $1,500 or $2,000 for a Mac, for an Apple or a Mac back then. So the people out here like myself that were on a budget, and $600 was a pretty inexpensive XT at that time, we built our own computers. We started going in and visiting bulletin board systems at that time. When we first started, there was not the internet as you know it today. There were what they call bulletin board systems, and individuals had servers that they set up in their home, and they might have two or three lines going in there of telephone lines. So it cost them a little bit of money each month to maintain these bulletin board systems. Well, you could go in there and you could look at their files and download some of their files, and then you could send a message to someone else on another internet. They started tying together all of these servers through mail, and what they do is that the mail server would go in and pick up mail from all these servers and then deliver mail that was going to that mailbox, okay? And before that even, when you're talking about, you had to have a modem. And a modem was a device that you could communicate digital information over a telephone line. Now, where that came about was that there were research facilities working with government agencies. And these research facilities had to communicate defense industry research and so forth with top government officials and top government bureaus and departments. So there was a company out of Boston that invented the modem, and that enabled the average company to start communicating with the federal government on a digital basis over telephone lines. Then the individual started picking up on the modems, and then from that the bulletin board systems were created. And what arose out of there, the next step in the internet, and I'll just tell you a little bit about the way it was put together originally, was a national, what they call national bulletin board systems. And you had America Online, you had Prodigy, and you had CompuServe. And there, they established a very high speed, as possible at that time, server that you dialed into. And you used 1-800 numbers to dial in. So you might pay $40 a month, I think is what I was paying on Prodigy. And you would dial in on a 1-800 line. You could stay on there for 2 or 3 hours because the line was toll free. And then you could look at files, you could leave messages, you could do what they call postings. You would post a message on a bulletin board system. And then somebody else would reply to you and post an answer. You go in and read the answer and then post another, you know, answer. And so, the one that, I looked at in detail was the JFK discussion group on Prodigy. And I learned a lot about the JFK, assassination at that time. We all believed initially that Lee Harvey Oswald was guilty and so forth, but there's been a lot of information that he was peripherally involved maybe, but he never pulled any trigger. But anyway, those national bulletin board systems, the next step was that these server companies, these internet servers, started realizing that if the telephone company could tie and start exchanging data within their infrastructure, then that would give them national network for internet. And that's what happened next. And then now we're at a sort of a flat rate. There's plenty of communication network, and with fiber optic, it's increased the ability and capacity of these lines to carry digital. So, and they've been using, the telephone companies have been transmitting digital information over these long distance telephone line for years. It's just that now they started carrying data instead of voice, and the data could be broken down on each end, so for email and things like that. Now let's get back to these citizen reporters. We have millions of those out there, and they're swarming like locusts. But I don't mean that in a negative way. They are getting out there. They're young people. They're listening to Ron Paul and other people, and like this Trump is coming about, all this corruption and everything. And so they're motivated by a lot of very decent people out there that want to reform the system to a degree, because they see how corrupt it has gotten. So they go out there with their little cameras and their little recorders or whatever, and they're getting better at this, you know. And Charlotte and I started broadcasting our first webcast, live webcast that was streamed, was from Independence Mall in 2007, and it was November, the day before Veterans Day of that year, because I know it was on a Saturday. So we went out there and set up, and I'll tell you a little story about that's sort of interesting, I had a little bit of a tiff with Ron Paul's campaign. They informed me a few days before, about a week before or so, that they were going to have that rally, the 2007 rally. Instead of having it on Independence Mall, they were moving it out to the Valley Forge site. You know, there's a convention center out there. And so I did not like that, so I got on the phone and I got Ted Anderson and I got Alex Jones and other people, and we called in to the Ron Paul people and so forth, and we got that changed back to Independence Mall, okay? And the reason why was that the symbols there in the Independence Mall were just too great, and it inspired Ron Paul to, I believe, to deliver a historical speech, being there on Independence Mall. Now, let me tell you what he did. He was, the stage was set up, let me give a little more details of this, because Charlotte really shined on this one, I'll tell you. That little gal, Charlotte Littlefield Brown, just loved the heck out of her. Anyway, Charlotte made some of the detailed arrangements for the national, people that take care of the mall and so forth. There's like a national rangers and stuff like that. Anyway, when we got there at 8 o'clock that morning, there's a ranger that came up to us. I believe he was National Guard, Parks Ranger or whatever. And he came up and he said, are you Mr. Butler? And Ms. Brown said, yes, sir, we are. He said, come with me. I'll show you your own power outlet here you can use. So he, behind this column over there, this brick column there, was a power outlet. And he said, this, you can use this, all you need. So thank you, sir. Thank you, thank you, officer. And boom, he was gone. But Charlotte had made those kinds of arrangements. So we get over there, okay, and we have 150 feet of extension line that we run over there to that power box. But also I had labored, getting back to the Ron Paul people was, once we got it back to the Independence Mall, I lobbied for them to put up a media riser, which they did, and they had a breakout box there. Well, the next thing that we run into, Charlotte Littlefield and I run into, is that we're trying to hook up and get this thing live, going live, and there's a distortion coming from the stage on the audio line, see? And so I needed to phone Austin. We were in Philadelphia, downtown there on the Independence Mall. I had to phone for my engineer here in Austin to help us, give us advice on what to do on this, see? So anyway, his name was Wes. He was running quite a network at the time, and we were broadcasting live on that network too. But we were also live streaming video and audio out on our own network. So, anyways, I was picking up my phone to charge it, recharge it, my cell phone, and there were all these people carrying placards out there, see? And somehow the wind blew a little sliver or one of those, a wooden sliver, up into my charge hole on my cell phone. I said, oh my gosh, I can't charge this. I need to get in touch with my engineer here in Austin. So I want to thank Wes for his boy's help. He's a premium guy. Anyway, Wes, you're just a fine person. Anyway, so I'm trying to debate what to do. About that time, a friend of mine comes by, James Booth comes by, and he says, what are you doing here? And I say, well, I'm supporting Ron Paul. We're broadcasting, but I've got a problem with my cell phone. I need to phone my engineer in Austin. And about that time, Charlotte Littlefield Brown pitches him a Swiss Army knife. Says, here, maybe this will help. And old James Booth caught that. He's like a chiropractor and good guy. And he said, here, let me see if I can help. And there were tweezers on the Swiss Army knife. And he pulls out the tweezers and pulls out that little sliver which was embedded down in there in the hole. And says, here, I think that'll help. Thank you, James. So boom, we're back. And I slapped my adapter charger in there. And boom, we got the, we're back in touch with our engineer here in Austin. And then he tells Charlotte, I give her the phone after it's charged up enough. And she takes the phone. He directs her to the breakout box. And then with a screwdriver, we had a toolbox with us. And then she turned down the input into the breakout box, and it was not distorted. We got up on the air and got Ron Paul broadcast. He got up there. Ron Paul got up there. And just closing comments on this, then we'll get back to the main program. It's just a story that I don't tell often, but it's interesting, I think, for our listening audience, hopefully. But anyway, he gets up there, and we're up and running about 30 minutes before Ron Paul speaks. So there's a band that plays some music. We get them on there, and then I do some video down of the back of the... So anyway, to set the scene here, the way the stage was set up, Ron Paul is facing east, okay? The mall runs north and south. To his left is north, and to his right is the south. Now, to his right is the back of the Independence Hall. To his left is the Constitution Center. That is a tourist type of a center to talk about the Constitution and the history of it. Off to his northeast, which would be northeast of the podium there, was the Mint, the Philadelphia Mint. So he gets up and starts speaking, and I'm just paraphrasing his words here. You can, we have a video on this on George Butler YouTube. You go in there and listen to the whole thing, a couple of hours long, and get the exact wording here. But anyway, he points off to his right to the Independence Hall, and he says, "We need a new Declaration of Independence." And then he points off to the left, and he says, to the Constitution Center, and he said, "We need to get back to the Constitution." Then he points off to the northeast there at the Philadelphia Mints, and he says, "We need honest money." And my gosh, there were 5,000 people on that mall that exploded in applause and yelling and screaming, "Yay!" You know, "Yay, yay, yay!" You know, for Ron Paul. But that's the kind of man that Ron Paul is. He's a principled person. And he stands on principles, and he means what he says, and says what he means. So, in today's world, we have we had these two administrations of Obama. We've had a very tumultuous and a very, very negative 8 years here, coming up to 8 years. And so, Trump is going in there, and I'll just mention a little bit about Trump here. He's going in, and if there's one word that I would use to describe Donald Trump is pragmatism. He's a pragmatist. He's drawing upon anyone and everyone that can benefit his own interests and his own goals. That means that he's reaching across party lines, across the aisle, so as they would say in the U.S. Congress, where the Republicans on one side of the aisle and the Democrats on the other. But he's reaching across the so-called aisle and bringing those people into Trump Tower and milking them. He's picking their brains for advice before he even begins his presidency. So that's what I see right now. Now, I don't see and agree with some of the appointments that he's making. And the U.S. Treasury appointment or his recommendations, I certainly don't agree with. But we have to see how he's going to perform. And there are about five different goals that I believe that he's trying to attain. And whether or not he'll reach all five major goals or not, I don't know if that will be possible. But I mean, there are things like immigration. We just got to get control over there. There's things like a tax cut. There's things like getting jobs back here. And there's things like appointing a new Supreme Court justice and building the wall and so forth would tie into the immigration. I'll think about the fifth one here in a second. But also corruption, I think, would be the fifth one. Is that he's trying to diminish somewhat or reduce somewhat the corruption that he sees in Congress and in D.C., Washington, D.C. But he's been an insider. He's a multi-billionaire, so he's played the system. So he said on his campaign trails that, yes, I was an insider and I took advantage of that. But he said, now I'm an outsider and I want to do something to reform the system. I think he's sincere in a way of trying to leave a legacy. I think it's the legacy that he's trying to leave, after he passes away, is that he was trying to do the right thing for America and to reform America and diminish and reduce somewhat the corruption in this country and get back to a much more economic, budget-minded system that was not ripping off the average taxpayer and give the taxpayer below $40,000 to $50,000 a tax break where they would not have to pay any personal income tax at all. So that's what I see in that area there, and we just sort of had to cover that. But anyway, Charlotte Littlefield Brown and I have done 130 live webcasts over the years. We started off doing a lot of the Ron Paul stuff. So on the George Butler YouTube site with my face up there, that's the one to go to. And you can click off on some of these. On our website, I did 11 interviews, 10 of which were with the speakers at the last JFK conference in Dallas, Texas. And so if you come into The Secret Truth and just click off on any one of those interviews, I interviewed like Wayne Mattson and Jim Mars, people like that, you'll be able to pick up on any of those and then go to my site, which I have about 100 videos on. We're putting up as many as we can every day. We have the latest one that I put up with a Ron Paul speech. that he gave at the Southern Republican Leadership Conference in New Orleans in 2011. And there's also a couple of panel discussions in there that I'm going to put up. And they picked up, what's interesting is the music that was playing before the panel discussion started was Muzak. So YouTube comes back and says, hey, you're using Muzak, a copyrighted song, but it came in through Muzak. So I mean, they've got this stuff down pretty well pat now, and we don't want to use any copyrighted material that we don't control or own ourselves. But we went back with them. Well, it's a fair use because we're there news reporting and covering news. And so news sites and journalists like Charlotte Littlefield and I are, and we are journalists. And I think we proved ourselves. We helped establish the editorial page for Genesis Communication Network. We wrote a series of articles, weekly articles, of about 15, 20, maybe 25. I've forgotten the number. And those were put up on the Genesis Communication Network editorial page at the time. So we helped establish that with Woodhouse up there. Rachel Woodhouse, I believe, was what her name was, that was managing that area for Genesis Communications Network. She was a really a sharp little thing. She came in from broadcast, commercial broadcasting, and she was doing a good job. But anyway, Charlotte Littlefield Brown and I, we're part of the alternative press. You could say the alt press or whatever. But we want to put out the truth, and we've been doing that, and we do substantiate what we say. There are a number of things that have popped up just recently, and it's under the auspices of Pizzagate. Now we're not going to go into real detail on that tonight, on this first hour. If you go into our last week, I'll put a couple of click-offs up that will be able to that you can use to go to and look at other information. There are people out there that are into this Pizzagate. They're far more involved and deeper, you could say, in the research of it than I am. So it's called the Comet Ping Pong. We don't know at what level the owner of that was involved, so we're not going to make a statement about his involvement. George Soros, his name, keeps popping up in this area, and especially during the race between Hillary and Donald Trump. And he's funding what his job is, and I've been looking at this for 30 years now, and so I have a bit of a grasp of what the overall system looks like and how it functions. And what they'll do is they'll use someone like George Soros to run the left networks on the collective left, and that's what his basic job is. His job is to go in and fund the collective left and run those networks, but control those networks. See, now there's other people on the right that are running networks too, and there's people all between. The system of rule that we're talking about is immense in scope. At this one little hour tonight, it's virtually impossible to cover exactly and to describe to you the immensity and the enormity of the system that has been developed and has evolved. And it's money-based. So when you're out of the temple banking, you had interest created. When you had interest, then you had that boiler fuel. And that boiler fuel works night and day. So interest is charged around 24-hour clock. So it works for the bankers on a 24-hour basis. So and then when you have central banking systems that create credits from out of thin air and then charge interest, well, you've got a system of banditry there, you know, and so that is what has been evolved and what has transpired since the temple banking out of the temples of Babylon, so to speak. But this new thing called Pizzagate is very interesting. I think it arose out of material and evidence that the New York Police Department uncovered on the Anthony Weiner. The elitists right now are using every possible avenue to cover this thing up. But it's real. That's a problem. They have invented the last thing. When I opened with this program tonight, I floated the concept of false fake. Concept with a hyphen between false and fake. So false hyphen fake concept. Now, the latest false concept is fake news. And what that is being put out there is this, to take out and to take down and to discredit any alternative press or journalists or bloggers that want to get to the truth. So they're after, and the larger people they're after right now, they're after people like Alex Jones. He reaches 30, 40 million a week, and that is beginning to be a major problem for them. See, and Alex has started off in school a history reader. He read a great deal about history, okay? And from that led him to expand his view, and then he started his own radio program, and then also he had Access Television down at the Austin Access Station for several years. And that helped his name identification was floated there. But anyway, I have these 13, list of these 13 evidences, of possibility of pedophilia. Pedophilia is at the top of the pyramid. The power group practices these kinds of things. And that's why it's important for them to cover it up. Here lately, we've had an intelligence agency come out and says, yeah, Russia helped Trump get into office. Now, it's ominous when they're saying things like that, because I don't believe that to be true, see. And so they're saying that as to set him up for some future fall or future problem of some kind, so they can say, yeah, look at that guy. He had the Russians. He's no good. He's against America, things like that, see. But this false news is being put out by the power people and the mainline press. So they grabbed upon this and they're pushing it to take down the alternative press, alternative media, see. And so that's what we're seeing right now underway. I don't think it's going to be successful this time, because what I stated earlier was we have these little citizen reporters, citizen bloggers, and they're everywhere, and they're like locusts. But unlike locusts, they do good. But they're swarming like that, like locusts swarm sometimes, you know. And so they're swarming on these sites and events and these, WikiLeaks and Wikipedia, and they're into all kinds of social networks. Yeah, they're categorizing these things. And let me state some of the dynamics of mining that's going on. You have Peter Thiel out there that founded PayPal, made a fortune. He took some of that money and founded Palantir, which was founded and funded first by the CIA. Now, the Palantir company is a data mining, an intelligence operation for the elite. And Peter Thiel sits on the steering committee, or has, of the Bilderberg Group, which is one of the most powerful groups that meets annually in the world. So Peter Thiel is sitting in there, head of Palantir, which is a mining operation. And what it does, it mines large databases, and also goes into all these social networks and picks up information about all of us, and then reports back to the Palantir servers. Then it has clients like the CIA and the NSA and other government organizations that it provides very, very private, and it's violation totally of our privacy in a way. But anyway, so he's sitting on, now his name has not been mentioned lately in any of the picks for these government jobs and appointments, so I don't know where, what Trump is considering him, but he's totally tied into the big power group through Palantir and so forth, so I don't recommend him for any government, because he's reporting directly to the Bilderberg Group every year. He's there. He has been for the last 2 or 3 years. So what he has at those meetings is theirs. They get anything they want to out of him. Now, getting back to this fake news concept, which false fake concepts, and they're pushing this. It's all over MSNBC. All of these different mainline deals. You got a Maddow there, Rachel Maddow. She's one of the worst ones out there in fake news. I've caught her in just outright outrageous statements that she's made on her program. But she was right there with Hillary, and Hillary was backed by the biggest money people in the world. BlackRock, which is the largest asset management company. And I've left up in the front of our page, I left up some information on BlackRock. It's managed by Larry Fink. It manages $4.5 trillion. Trillion, not billion. T with a trillion. $4.5 trillion. It has as its stakeholders and stockholders all the major financial institutions in the world. Okay? So on that list there, you're going to, and go in there and get the latest list that might be dated at this time. But it gives you an idea of who was originally behind Hillary. The biggest money in the world and the Bilderberg Group and all these big, the biggest billionaires in the world were behind Hillary. Plus, BlackRock was solidly behind her and wanted to put their own people into the U.S. Treasury and so forth. So we're talking about a money-based system. America does not have a culture. It has a business pecking order, and it's split out and organized around money from the top to the bottom. It's what you're worth, your net worth. What your financial statements say. What do you have? What kind of car do you drive? What kind of house do you live in? And so forth. Who are your friends? Who are they movers or shakers, or are they homeless people on the streets? You know what I mean? So the pecking order here has evolved like that, likewise, into a fashion and in line with a money order pecking order from top to bottom. So everything has become financial, see? Now, the battleground today is there's a psychological warfare going on, okay? And what the warfare is underway is you have the status quo, you could say, group, and Hillary is right there. She's still leading that group. And then you have a reform group out here, and somewhat led by Trump, but he is surrounding himself with some insiders. But some of the military picks, I think, are encouraging. And Mattis, I believe, the rumor is he had a discussion about waterboarding with Trump, and Trump changed his mind on waterboarding. I think Mattis, the way the rumor goes is Mattis says, hey, we get more out of interrogated prisoners by giving them a cigarette, giving them a good meal, talking to them, than we do with waterboarding. So I think Trump is a listener, and he can change, and he can mature. The problem with Trump right now that I see, the remaining problems, is that the ego there is just so overwhelmingly strong, and he hates to be criticized, so he's always got to answer back, see. Anyone that criticizes, he always has to hit them back harder than they hit him. So, becoming, when he's managing, and I'll just mention one of the problems here that I see, when you're managing the Trump Corporation or the group of companies that he manages, You can dictate orders to your employees because you pay them, right? And they work for you. It's a corporate structure from top to bottom, vertical. You know, execute what I want and that's it, or you're gone. You're out of here. Well, in the government, you have civil service, career civil service employees. It doesn't quite work the same way as it does with a corporation. So Trump is going to have to acclimate himself to the president. See, of the United States is different than the president of a corporation or the chief executive officer of a corporation. They're just totally different. The presidency or the president of the United States has to delegate more, and it's a bigger organization. Okay, it's millions of people working for the presidency through all government branches. See, and also Congress has a mind of its own out there. And then if the Congress is corrupted by the big money and the corporate structure, then you've got to deal with a corrupt Congress, see? So that's just another issue. Then you've got the judiciary here that he's going to appoint a more moderate, conservative Supreme Court justice, which is an important appointment. So that's just another thing to deal with in court decisions, see? And so then he's got this immigration thing, and then you got the adversarial relationship with the Democrats. I think what he's doing, he's calling into Trump Tower anyone and everyone. He had Al Gore in there the other day. Ivanka was sitting in on that discussing climate change or so forth. I think they're viewing right now they're viewing the sequel to An Inconvenient Truth, I believe, right now, this weekend, is being broadcast, screened out there at the annual movie screening. And so that's underway. He's bringing in all kinds of people, some movie stars, this and that. This, you know, they're left, they're from the left to the right and then all in between. So I foresee something that might be productive in the end for the country and for Trump as a person, and could build a legacy for him that would be valid. But the opposition out there, it has not given up. And it's very ominous and it's very dangerous. And Michael Moore is saying that strange things could happen or fun, you know, to Trump. So, I mean, you've got that Michael Moore's off the edge. He's totally out of touch with the American public. And that gets back to what really happened on this election. What were some of the major deciding factors? And here's what they were. They see two administrations, of Obama. And things didn't change that much. He funded the financial organizations to the hilt and kept them going when some of the biggest ones should have failed. He should have let them fail. But he through the Fed, they used quantitative easing. So he's right there. He's owned by the financials, by the international financiers. So he kept that going. Hillary was in conversation on her email to the Rothschilds. So they owned her. They still own her. Same. So the big money coming out of Europe, coupled with the Bilderberg Group and all that, still had their way in America. Their goal for America is to destroy the country, not to turn it around and help build jobs here. Their idea is that America is obstructive to their New World Order and their world government plans. And so their goals have been to decimate, to diminish the influence and the viability, the economic viability of America. And I think Trump realizes that. I think he's in major disagreement with that. They were going to use the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement to further decimate and destroy our authority and our business climate here in America. And so he realizes that too. That's why he's behind that, against that. The immigration thing, they're flooding in people and they're going to join the Democratic Party, and the Catholic Church is there helping. So the Catholic Church benefits from more followers, and they'll join the Democratic Party with the working man's type of argument. See what I mean? So that was ongoing. That can be stopped to a certain degree. This Islam thing is a mixed bag. There are possible false flag operations that have occurred on some of these shootings, and I'm not going to set those out in detail. You'll have to research that on the web yourself. But there have been false flag operations that have been carried out along the lines of the Gladio operations over in Europe, and those are real. And Dr. Gassner, I'll put that link up tonight, is one of the authorities on a NATO secret army Gladio operations. And so he wrote a fine book on that out of Switzerland. But he's an international, you could say, researcher on international politics and going ons like that. So what we're seeing now is that we've got to try to protect Trump. We've got to try to get him into the White House and see what he does about these promises that he made. He's appointing people that are insiders, some of them. So is he going to turn them around and co-opt them into his way of thinking? Or are they going to collectively at the cabinet meetings express certain opinions that are favorable to the existing insiders? This has to be seen in the future. So we'll just have to give him a chance and let this play out for a while and just see where we go. But reiterating again, the new concept is false-fake concepts. Let me state that again. False-fake concepts. And those fake concepts comprise of false memory syndrome, which I believe is false and inaccurate, and it's been discredited by reputable psychiatrists and psychologists. And then this fake news thing. But both of these, which is a recent thing that has arisen because of the Pizzagate scandal. So, but both of these concepts, the false-fake concepts, are to cover pedophilia. That's the problem. And pedophilia is practiced by the the members of your upper elites throughout the world. And we've got all kinds of Belgian problems, got Seville, Jimmy Seville in England. We've got the Catholic Church's debacle here of pedophilia and so forth over the years here in America. All kinds of lawsuits and payouts by the church to damaged parties, see. So it's real. It's out there. We got the Franklin cover-up, the Franklin scandal. We got the D.C. madam. He testifies to what's going on in Washington as a honeypot. And so there is a lot here. There's more where there's smoke and fire, there's going to be, you know, evidence. And so that's what this Wiener bust did. Whether or not they're going to be able to bring that out, Trump on the scandal is saying, "Oh, that's to be forgotten." On the Hillary, they're chanting, "Put her in jail," but he seems to be throwing cold water on that now at some of his stops or some of his latest speeches. So don't think that's going to happen. If that doesn't happen, then he may be secure in going into the White House on January 20th. That is the date of the inauguration in Washington. I just hope and pray that the adversaries out there don't mount some kind of disruption there of the inauguration, but that seems to be the scuttlebutt of the underground, that they're going to go in there with they won't millions, but they may end up with thousands, but there'll be a big police presence there because there have been other threats made by Al-Qaeda or jihadists or whoever. You know, the ISIS elements or whatever. It's hard to talk about these things because there's some lone wolf operators out there too that are Islam believers and so forth. So anyway, let's just hope and pray that we don't have big problems in Washington on January 20th, 2017, day of the inauguration. Getting back to the solution, and I've said this time and time again, to forgive yourself and others is the path. And when you start treading that path, you are going to be released from a thought slavery, from a mind washing, from a mind control system that has evolved and developed over decades in this country, if not centuries worldwide. The secret societies are ruling us from behind the curtain, much like the Wizard of Oz. The wizard was behind a green screen, broadcasting all of these things that control the players in the Wizard of Oz. We are just actors playing out roles that are being seeded into our minds, but we are not aware of it because the delusion that we're experiencing hides the fact that we are deluded. So the delusion hides the delusion. If you can begin to start thinking like that this is a field system that surrounds us, we're inundated constantly by propaganda and so forth, and it's hard to come out of this state. And it's hard to see it because we're caught up in it, see? And so that is really what we're talking about here, is trying to get people to awaken, to become aware of themselves, their real core self, and to dissolve that false self through forgiveness. Through forgiveness, you'll dissolve that false self and you'll move back to a state of real enlightenment. And that's what we're trying to do with our program, Charlotte Littlefield and myself, is trying to enlighten people, to bring them out of that false self, slave state, and to try to once again get back to that real core self. The real self is conscience-based, and it loves and forgives others in that state. We want to thank you tonight for listening, and we'll be back every Saturday night, 7 to 9, broadcast here live in Austin, Texas. Thank you for listening. And good night. God bless all of you. And vayos con Dios for everyone. Good night again.